I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello, this is the Pedestrian Podcast. So this week, we are obviously going to be delivering you your weekly hour or so of goodness. But this week, me and Adam had the chance to have a just under an hour long conversation with BBC Radio Sheffield's Rob Staton, and who also runs a Seahawks draft blog. So here is that in all its entirety for your delectation.
Third down and 11 for Russell. Empty backfield from the Eagles 40. Russell steps up in the pocket. He's got a scramble left. Now he looks. Pump fake. Now he throws downfield. A back shoulder throw. Jimmy Graham 10. He cuts back inside middle of the field 5. Touchdown Seahawks. What a play by Russell to fight his way free. Finds Jimmy Graham, how I don't know, and Graham turns it into a touchdown from 35 yards out, and the Seahawks go on top 12-7.
Right, and here now on the Pedestrian Podcast, we are joined by Rob Staton. Rob is works for BBC Radio Sheffield and also has a really, really good Seahawks draft-centric blog or website. How are we, Rob?
Yeah, really good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. We really, as Adam said before we came on, we really do appreciate you joining us. Just quickly before we dive into more season-centric questions, how did you get into the sport and then obviously the Seahawks in particular?
Well, in at the start of 2006, I went to live in Vancouver and was aware of the NFL and had sort of a semi-interest in it. I'm kind of interested in most sports, so had an interest in that. Vancouver's very much an ice hockey city, so we went to watch the Canucks play. But we also travelled to Seattle. Me and my she was my girlfriend at the time, but she's my wife now. And we went to Seattle and we watched the Mariners play. And as we were leaving the Mariners stadium, we went past, it was called Quest Field at the time. And I remember sort of saying, you know, it'd be great to go there and see a game as well. And a few weeks down the line, we had a chance to go back to Seattle. We went to a game between Green Bay and the Seahawks, which was, I don't know if you remember it, guys, it was a Monday night football game in the snow. And Seattle won the game. It was the Hasselbeck, sort of Sean Alexander era. And from going to that game and from that day, was just really hooked in the team. I remember actually we got into the stadium and we had a look at the tickets and it said Row SR. And we were like, where's Row SR? We went right to the back of the stadium, couldn't find Row SR anywhere. I'm starting to think that we've been sold some dodgy tickets, but then I'm thinking, how did we actually get into the stadium with dodgy tickets? We spoke to a steward and they didn't know where Row SR was. It turns out that Row SR means row standing room only. So if people have been to CenturyLink Field, there are like numbers on the floor around the outside of the stadium, and we had two numbers, and basically we just had to stand on the number and watch the game. I didn't know when I broke this news to my wife, who's not a massive sports fan. She was very, very upset. And then when the snow started coming and it was blowing right into our faces for the 4-hour game, she was quite perturbed by that. But I just loved every minute of it, and I've been hooked with the team ever since.
Cool. So have you been? How many times have you been back since that the first trip out there?
We've been. I try and go. I've tried to go every year since, but it's been quite difficult for my wife's pregnant at the moment, so I'm not sure that we'll get out this year. The last time I was out was for the Philadelphia game this year. A few weeks ago, we were there in for the Dallas game in 2014. Cincinnati in 2011. So we try and get out to a game as often as possible. So, and when we don't get out there, we've sometimes been able to go and watch the teams. We went to watch the Jets play in New York one year. So try and get there as often as possible.
So you've missed us by 1 week each the last 2 years then, because we did Buffalo on Monday night this year, and then we did the Oakland game the year before that, I think, or 2 years ago when you were at Dallas. So we've missed you a week out every time. It is such an intoxicating atmosphere. And like for those of our listeners who are planning a trip, sort of, are you able to, we've tried to convey the emotion when you're there, but there's just something about going to a game that's just different to a game here, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm very fortunate doing the job that I do that I get to go and watch a lot of sporting events live. And, you know, I was at St. James's Park a couple of weeks ago and was at Wembley for a couple of playoff finals this year in 2016. And the atmosphere in those games was good, but you kind of have to go to CenturyLink to experience how loud it is and just how intense it is and how great it is as well. One of the things that I really like about it is if you go to an English football game, you could never have sort of home and away fans sat next to each other because there'd be a riot. But the great thing about sort of being in Seattle is I've always ended up being sat near, whether it's Cowboys fans or Eagles fans or Green Bay fans or whatever. And, you know, there's no trouble there. It's all pretty lighthearted. It's good. And I just think that's a nice edge to it as well. And it's a really special place. And if anybody's not been and they are thinking about a trip, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Moving on to the season, we're talking a few days up before the Detroit Lions game, the wildcard game. What have your thoughts been on this season? It's been a bit of a gnarly one, I think is the word I keep pulling back on. It's not been, obviously, the Seahawks have got used to the last few years, but we're still in the playoffs and still in the tournament, as Adam's been saying for a few weeks. But what have your thoughts been on the 2016 Seahawks so far?
It's been a weird season because I think even last year, which was somewhat similar, you went into the playoffs thinking, you know, no one's going to want to play Seattle. They'd been to the previous two Super Bowls. They'd destroyed Arizona in week 17. So there was a feeling that the Seahawks could really do something. And then this year, they're going into the playoffs in a way that they haven't in any of the previous few years. You know, the people are ranking them amongst the, you know, the weaker playoff teams. The expectation isn't great, and it's either going to go one of two ways. Either I think they're going to have a very disappointing flat exit this weekend, and it's going to lead to a very important off season, or they're somehow going to find a spark. They're going to start turning it on now, and they're going to realize the potential, because it is a really talented roster, and it is a roster with holes, of course, you know, with the offensive line not playing very well. There's no running game. Earl Thomas is a big miss, but it's still arguably the most talented roster in the postseason, you know, if as a collection of individuals. So if they can bring it together, hopefully they can. Then they've got every chance of doing something, but it's hard to be overly optimistic, because I think if you were being honest, there are certainly better teams that are going into the postseason than Seattle at the moment, at least in the terms of the way they're playing.
Yeah, agree. So for that spark to light, where do you see the spark being need to be lit on this team? Any particular unit, or is it just all, as you say, all over?
I think if they are going to do anything, I think that one of the most important units is going to be the pass rush, because, you know, if you sort of think back to the 2011 Giants, you know, they were a 9-7 team. They were like 30th rushing in the NFL that year. But because of the pass rush, they were able to force pressure. They limited some big quarterbacks. You know, they beat Green Bay in Green Bay to get to the Super Bowl. They beat Tom Brady for the second time in that Super Bowl. And the Seahawks have definitely got the talent up front to not necessarily match the likes of Michael Strahan and Usu Manyora that year, but, you know, they could cause teams problems. And I think if they're going to do anything, it's going to be those guys. It's going to be Michael Bennett, Frank Clark, Cliff Averill, who can, you know, get to quarterbacks. You know, they're probably going to play... Well, they will play Matt Stafford, and then it'll be Matt Ryan if they win this weekend. So, you know, they've got to impact those guys. They've got to try and force some turnovers. They've got to, you know, shift the field advantage and try and get the ball for Seattle in key areas and take some pressure off the offense. Because I think the offense is going to have to rely heavily on the passing game. I think they pretty much accepted that they can't run the ball the way they want to. So, you know, it's going to be very much on Russell Wilson's shoulders and Jimmy Graham, Doug Baldwin, and the offensive line, giving Russell Wilson just enough protection. And that will all be aided if the pass rush and the defense can maybe force a couple of turnovers in each game.
Yeah, I've been saying on our pod for the last few weeks, probably since the Philadelphia game, that it's been fairly easy to see how the regular season's going to evolve. You know, we're going to make the playoffs because the rest of the division is not that great. Dallas are probably going to be number one seed because they've just been very, very impressive. aside from obviously the blip of not getting the second seed, is there any chance that maybe that view has permeated into the players in the last 4 or 5 weeks? And, you know, we know that it's only a 2% drop can make all the difference in a game in the NFL. Is there any chance that, you know, seeing the words playoffs around the stadium might just reignite us for as you say, just a big push?
Yeah, I think there's every chance of that. I mean, it'd be a real surprise if certain players didn't raise their game now that the playoffs are here, especially a playoff game in Seattle. I mean, a year ago, it was having to go to Minnesota and play in, you know, Arctic conditions, which I think really did hurt the Seahawks the following week against Carolina. Plus, that, you know, they don't have to play on grass, which is another thing that they seem to have been bothered by the last sort of 12 months. But, yeah, I would imagine that. It's just that you don't really know what you're going to get from the Seahawks this year. And, you know, I'm kind of on a wait-and-see kind of feeling. I don't have a good feeling either way that, you know, they're either going to come out playing really good football or they're going to struggle. I mean, either could happen, really. I mean, it's been that kind of year. The offense can be incredibly explosive, not just in one game and then poor the next. We're talking about halves here. I mean, like against Arizona, the second half, the offense was unstoppable. In the first half, I think they had 1 yard total offense in the first half. The defense was kind of the opposite. You know, they were very restrictive in the first half and then were giving up five play touchdown drives in the second half. So you don't know what you're going to get half to half, let alone game to game. So, you know, I would hope that they could beat Detroit and find a level of consistency in that game. I think the best thing they could get, I don't even think a blowout would be most beneficial to the Seahawks. I think a good, solid, consistent, you know, kind of like 20-10 type of win might give them more confidence than anything.
Yeah. On Saturday, you mentioned the pass rush. There's very few quarterbacks who throw the ball with all the different launch points that Matt Stafford is. Is this extra key to just stop him throwing it like underarm to Golden Tate for 20 yards and stuff
this weekend? I think so. I mean, obviously Stafford is hurt and that is impacting him. I mean, the way that he was playing even like a month ago is completely different to the way that he's playing now. And, you know, they're not the same team that played in Seattle a year ago. You know, they don't have Calvin Johnson anymore. They have a number of injuries at running back, which is going to help the Seahawks, I'd imagine. And defensively, a couple of their players have either been hurt for most of the year and have never found their best form, or they're just completely out at the moment. So, you know, I think it's a good time to play Detroit. I'm really pleased that it's Detroit and not Green Bay, because I think if you're going to play Green Bay at all, play them at the furthest possible point down the road, you know, because give them a chance to maybe lose a bit of momentum, because the way that they're playing right now is incredible. And if they win against New York, I think we'll all look forward to watching Dallas Green Bay in the divisional round. I think the thing with Matt Stafford is he has these unique sort of throwing positions, but the Seahawks really stymied him last year in that Monday Night Football game until the final drive of the game, when Cam Chancellor punched the ball out of Calvin Johnson and they ended up winning that one. And I'm hopeful that they can do something similar in this game.
Yeah, and obviously those 15 of the 16 games they had this year, they've been behind in the fourth quarter, which is just ridiculous, really. On their defensive side, it's not too sure what the status is of Darius Slay. It's just the Ziggy and all the big boys up front. Haleti Nata is still knocking around. Is that a concern against this O-line, or did they show you enough on Sunday when they did play relatively well? The O-line, is that a point of focus for the defensive side for Detroit?
Well, yeah, the thing is my impression of Detroit was that they had this really good defensive front. I mean, Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator, does a really good job there with talent that's been diminished over the years. They've lost some key players, but it's a strange one, because I actually looked at the statistics last night, and I think they're something like 31st in the NFL for quarterback pressures, and they're amongst the lowest in the league for sacks as well. So, you know, sometimes a team can pressure a quarterback a lot and not just get and just not get sacks, but still impact the offense. But Detroit don't seem to be doing that. You know, they don't have the QB hurries that you'd expect from this defense. And Ziggy Ansah's been injured for most of the year and has never really had his best form. I mean, when he came to Seattle a year ago, he was incredible. And that is just, he's just not the same player at the moment. I mean, maybe playing Seattle's O-line will enable him to find some form, but I would hope that they can manage that situation. Russell Wilson is going to get sacked in this game. Russell Wilson is going to get pressured in this game. That's just the way it's been all year. But I would hope that the Seahawks can adjust their offense. You know, I don't think they're the fastest at linebacker, for example. So stuff over the middle, you know, those quick screens that we seem to see a lot of with the Seahawks offense, they could work in this game.
Yeah, I wish we saw more of them, to be honest. Just moving on to a more general Seahawk comment. Obviously, Twitter is always a buzz with excellent content that people like Davis Assu, I believe you speak to on a fairly regular basis, Rob. There was an interesting comment that one of them made about that, you know, looking at the team and you've seen people like Jaron Reed and Frank Clark getting into it on the sidelines. You know, we've always had quite a fracturous team, but it seems a little bit extra this year for whatever reason. And a point that I think Davis was making was that maybe they're just, it's not that it's going stale, but hearing the same voices over and over again with the same players might just be wearing a little bit thin. Do you think there's anything in that?
Possibly. I mean, it's hard to tell without being in the within the confines of the team, but you know, I would be lying if I didn't say at some point during that San Francisco game in the first quarter, I was kind of thinking that that's the case, because they were, 14-3 down. Mm. San Francisco were, you know, they're very close to Cleveland in terms of how bad they are this year. And here they were sort of marching up and down against the Seahawks. But then there was just a switch flipped, and then all of a sudden it became the kind of game that we expected. And if you take away those two early drives, there wasn't really anything in it for San Francisco. So, I hope that's not the case. You know, I think that the team is too professional to sort of think, you know what, you know, we've heard all this before, we've been here before. I hope that the Pete Carroll era is not going stale. But in terms of the characters in the team, and I know there's probably going to be a lot of Seahawks fans out there thinking, if this coaching changes, you know, for example, if Tom Cable gets a head coaching job, that would be a really good thing because the O-line might get better or whatever. I'd be careful what you wish for there, because Tom Cable is one of the few guys in that coaching staff who really connects with these players, who they really trust and they have a lot of respect for. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, how much respect did he have for authority in Seattle? And yet he's on the phone with the journalist, Tom Pelissero, this week, actually talking about Tom Cable and how he deserves a chance to be a head coach. Now, Lynch would not be doing that if he didn't have the utmost respect for Cable. And I think keeping people like him just will help keep this really... there's a lot of different personalities in there. You know, it's constantly on the brink of, you know, really sort of exploding. And I think certain people, and Carroll does a good job of it, and Cable and people like that, just keep it from boiling over too much. So I'm hopeful that this isn't going to be a big problem, and that hopefully if they have a good playoff run, it will eliminate some of this talk.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, you put on your website, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. If anyone listening hasn't check that out yet, it's definitely something I recommend doing, because it's really good, especially obviously in the lead up to the draft in a few months. You spoke about the running game and running back free agents, and one player that got my Adam's attention was Jonathan Stewart, who obviously I think he's a Washington State kid. Is that a position you see him addressing in free agency, running back, and obviously in particular Jay Stew?
Yeah, is it a position I think that they will add to? Whether it's free agency or whether it's the draft, I think we're going to see at least one running back added to the roster, partly because they need more competition, partly because they've had injuries this year to everybody. And I think they will want to go into camp with at least another option, at least another body in there. Even if it's not somebody who necessarily sticks with the team, I think they're going to want some competition. So Jonathan Stewart was at Oregon, and Pete Carroll, when he was at USC, faced him a number of times, and has often spoken before the Seahawks have played Carolina about his respect for Jonathan Stewart. he's a player that I really like because he's just the kind of runner that maybe the Seahawks don't have right now in that he will get the tough yards, very tough to bring down. You know, he can wear a defense down over four quarters. In the fourth quarter in particular, you know, a player like that's invaluable. The reason why I think he might be available is Carolina are picking eighth overall in the draft, and we heard Dave Gettleman, their GM, saying the other day that what they're going to do is they're going to take the best player available, and that could be, his words were, that could be a defensive end, it could be a safety, it could be a running back, because they're the best positions in this draft. Now, they could take a pass rusher, you know, someone like Solomon Thomas, who was fantastic for Stanford the other day in the bowl game against North Carolina. They could take somebody like Jamal Adams, who's a safety, or Jabril Peppers, or Malik Hooker, or they could take one of the two really good running backs, which are Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook. And in my last mock draft, I had them taking Dalvin Cook. And if they do that, then it stands to reason that they might consider trading Jonathan Stewart, who's due $8.5 million in 2017. So, you know, if they do take a running back early, then that's maybe something the Seahawks would consider trading and maybe having a look at Jonathan Stewart.
I'd be a big fan of that. I mean, if anything, if you look at the current room now, if it was going to be Rawls, Collins and Procise, the lack of experience there for anything, you know, an older voice could be really crucial. In terms of the rest of free agency, we keep reading that the Seahawks probably have enough cap room to do maybe one, hopefully two big free agent signings. I look around the league and I think that, you know, people spending money on the offensive line is all well and good, but it doesn't often, or it doesn't always certainly, reap the success that you'd like. And to be honest, I think if they were going to spend big money on someone, another dominant pass rusher like Calais Campbell would be my pick. I mean, have you had any thoughts about, obviously you've mentioned this on your website, have you had any further thoughts about if there was, for example, 20 million of space to use, where that the Seahawks might be better off using that?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think if you're going to get an offensive lineman, make sure you're getting one of the best in the league. There's a guy called Kevin Zeitler from Cincinnati who might be appealing. You know, he's one of the best guards in the NFL, but he might command the kind of money that Kelechi Osemele got last year, which is, you know, $11 million a year. And, you know, you might not want to pay an offensive guard that much. So if you look at teams like Minnesota went big in free agency on their O-line. They signed Alex Boone. They signed Andre Smith. Their offensive line has been one of the worst in the NFL this year. So it's not always a cure-all for an offensive line just to go and spend big in free agency. Whereas a lot of the big-name pass rushers who were signed a year ago have actually had a lot of success. I mean, Olivier Vernon has been completely worth the $17 million he got because he leads the league in tackles for loss and stuff like that. So I would seriously consider, if I had sort of $20 million to spend, if Calais Campbell reaches free agency, I would be willing to give him a large portion of that. Because if you could put him in the middle of that defensive line with Michael Bennett off the edge, Frank Clark, Cliff Averill, you know, I just think, and maybe Quinton Jefferson coming back and people like that as well. I mean, that would just be a fearsome pass rush. They could probably have more success with a four-man rush, which is something they've maybe struggled with at times this year. If you're getting penetration up the middle, a lot of these quarterbacks are mobile these days. They'll just walk straight into a defensive end. So it's perhaps something the Seahawks lack most of all. So I'd be a big fan of going after someone like Calais Campbell in free agency.
Yeah, and a couple of weeks ago, Ross compared it to the Kevin Williams move we made a few years ago. Obviously, he did the experienced defensive tackle to try and get him one more push to a Super Bowl. It'd be probably a little more expensive than Williams was, but that's the right kind of ballpark, isn't it? The comparison for Campbell.
Well, I think the thing about Calais Campbell is he has had, I think, as many QB pressures as anybody in the league. I think he's had something like 22 this year. Which is considerably more than, you know, even people like Michael Bennett. And while he doesn't have the big sack numbers, he contributes a lot. I mean, Arizona had the number two defense in the NFL, I think, statistically. And he is a large part of that. And he helps people like Chandler Jones and the secondary as well because of his presence up the middle. So I think that he's going to cost a lot more than Kevin Williams. His contract this year is $15 million. And I think if you wanted to sign him, then you might have to sort of pay him 12 to 15 million. I mean, trust me, he would be worth every single penny for this defense. I mean, he is, he's the kind of missing link that they don't have at the moment. So I'd be very interested in bringing him to Seattle.
It might cost another million in strepsils because his voice is bad enough in Arizona. Oh. I worry about that sore throat up in Seattle in the cold. you might need some Lemsip and strepsils on tap for him because it could be a big struggle.
Yeah, definitely. I love his voice. He's
brilliant, isn't he?
You know, you know that he's a tough guy when he speaks. The way that he talks like that. That's so the kind of guy I want to
all those questions, obviously, the cap room they've got, they could go any which way. Is that that's going to massively dictate what they do at the end of April, isn't it, in the draft?
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, because, I mean, I think that the main priority is going to be to fix the running game. And it's how do you fix that? You know, are you going to fix it with free agent moves, you know, getting a running back, maybe adding some experience up front in the O-line? Or are you going to get that in the draft? And it could be that, you know, they do look at running back and offensive line in this draft. I know it's stronger at other positions, but it's still a possibility for them. There are still offensive linemen that are going to intrigue them. There are still running backs that are going to intrigue them. The key is, you know, what do you do in free agency? How do you set yourself up for the draft? They have a couple of big needs I think they need to address, which is obviously that interior defensive line, improving the running game, and maybe just getting a bit more depth in the secondary as well. And they're all things that you can do with a combination of free agency and draft.
Yeah, I think with the draft, I think that's my main issue with Cable, really, is that most of the O-line have been people that he's banged the table for, and I'm not too sure if I would like him having his way with another first-round pick. Obviously, Ifedi looks the part at certain points, but hasn't got Justin Britt, who they possibly reached for a few years ago. You've got the two, Carpenter and Moffitt, from the same draft class, who just flamed out. Obviously, Carpenter's now in New York, but Moffitt's probably somewhere down in Madison, enjoying himself. I think that is my main issue with Cable, is the say and impact he has on the players at that position. We draft and compare him to Bevel, who doesn't seem to get much of a say. He's just told to work with what he's given, kind of thing. Would you agree with that somewhat?
I think it's a very complex issue because there's sort of many strands to this. First of all, the Seahawks have not picked early enough to get at the top offensive linemen. I mean, there are so few good offensive linemen in college football these days. I mean, if people, there's a lot of stuff I've written about this in the past, but what has actually happened, there's been a trend in the last 5 years that the best athletes at high school have chosen to play defensive line instead of offensive line. And it's all because of people like Olivier Vernon getting, you know, $110 million contracts. So what you end up having is all the colleges are loaded with really athletic defensive linemen. And the offensive linemen are just basically, they're just normal guys. They're not these incredible athletes. They're not Walter Jones. They're all playing on the defensive line. And it's translating through to the NFL now. So if you have five really athletic, talented offensive linemen in a draft class, you can almost guarantee they'll all go in the top 20, which means that when the Seahawks are picking, like they were last year, 25, 26, and then they trade down to 31, it can be very difficult for them to get at the best defensive linemen. So one of the things they've clearly done, and we did a study on this on Seahawks Draft Blog, if people want to find it, you know, if you just Google trench explosion formula, we actually calculated something that looks at an ideal that Tom Cable has talked about for offensive linemen based on physical profile. And we identified that nearly every single offensive lineman they've taken all match the same physical profile. So they're looking for athletes. They're looking for the guys that, you know, match up to the athleticism of the guys going early in the draft, but for whatever reason, whether it's a technique thing, an experience thing, they've gone later on. And if you're going to do that, and that seems to be Seattle's approach, and I'm not sure that's something driven by Tom Cable as more John Schneider and Pete Carroll, if you're going to go that way, you're going to have some growing pains when you draft these guys. And with the Seahawks having an offensive line which has a guy who's playing basketball last year at left tackle, a first-year starter at left guard, a rookie at right guard, first-year center at center, and Gary Gilliam at right tackle, then you are going to have some major growing pains. And the only other solution to this is to A, pick earlier in the draft and therefore be worse in the regular season, trade up or spend money in free agency. And it's not an ideal situation, but I can kind of see why the Seahawks have gone this way, because unless you are picking early, I mean, Jack Conklin was the number 8 overall pick. This time last year, people were talking about him going in the second round. He tests well at the combine. He goes number 8 overall. In fact, Tennessee traded up to get him. So that's the kind of battle that teams are having in trying to find the best defensive lineman. And if you aren't picking early, good luck. And people talk about Dallas's O-line. They've got Tyron Smith, who was the 9th overall pick. They got Zach Martin, who was the 15th overall pick. And they got Lyle Collins, who would have been a top 15 pick if not for the trouble that he had during the draft and he went undrafted. But then he handpicked Dallas as an undrafted free agent to go and sign there. So they've had a bit of fortune with that. They've invested high picks in their O-line. And if the Seahawks are picking in the top 15, I think they would have easily have had the same guys on their roster.
I'm pleased you mentioned Fant, because you probably would have seen this comment from Tom Cable yesterday. I'm just going to read it. It's a couple of sentences. Cable said on Fant yesterday, what he does, and I'm quoting this verbatim, which will excuse the ever so slightly strange grammar. what he doesn't know, he gains in the game. You can't teach him that without doing. And once he figures something out, we don't have anyone better. And there really isn't too many guys better than him in football that way. But there's no background. There's none of that here. And I hear it. I know where you're going with that, but it's not true. He's really good when he knows what he's doing, when he's experienced it. Actually, I wonder if that might be a microcosm for the line in general. This is a group that's been patched together. And even going into week 16, we didn't know who our right tackle was. And I wonder if maybe continuity might be the best thing for this line. And if you think that it may be a case that they're going with the same five guys next year, hoping that another year in the weight room and of camp together might make them better. Because as you say, they are often good, but it's just eradicating the crap that we need to do if possible.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of crap this year. let's not pretend that there hasn't been major growing pains with this line. But yeah, I think that this is the issue. I mean, George Fant is a rookie undrafted free agent playing left tackle. But you look at his athletic profile and he could be Jason Peters, but even Jason Peters wasn't Jason Peters as a rookie. So you've kind of got to let him take his lumps a little bit and then hope that he can take the next step. Certainly you would imagine that Jermaine Ifedi is going to improve. I'm convinced by that. He's too good a player. He was too good a player at Texas A&M, and he's shown in flashes this year that he's too good to not progress as his career develops. And you know, not every rookie is great in year one. You know, I would imagine that he's going to take a major leap forward in year two. Mark Glowinski's kind of solid. You know, whether you would hope, I mean, he's athletic enough to take a major step forward. You would hope that that would happen with him. And Justin Britt's been pretty good at center. The only problem is with sort of this plan is I think it's pretty clear that a year ago they hoped that Gary Gilliam was going to take steps forward. You know, it was his first year as a starter last year. They envisioned him being the left tackle in camp. They then decided that he couldn't do that. Then he was at right tackle. Then he was benched. Then he came back into the lineup, benched again, and now he's back in again. And they seem to have had little projects like this in the past. Gilliam, Alvin Bailey was one of those. Michael Bowie, who played in 2013, who they're sort of later round picks or undrafted guys, who they could see, okay, they'll improve, they'll give them some playing time, we'll see the benefit down the line, and it just hasn't happened. You know, 6 months after sort of banking on these guys to take a step forward, they've either been cut or benched. So hopefully that's not going to be the case with Fant. I mean, they need to start hitting on some of these. If they're going to put their faith in this line, 2017, we need to see George Fant take a step forward. We need to see Nifedi take a step forward. We need to see Glowinski take a step forward. And I don't think they're going to bank on all five of these players next year. I would imagine that there's going to be at least some competition at left guard. Maybe that's Odhiambo, who's not played much. Maybe it's somebody else. I would imagine they're going to bring in a right tackle, whether it's an experienced veteran or a rookie at some point, to compete with whoever's there. I mean, Gilliam is a restricted free agent. It's very little point in releasing him. I think that he might come back on a one-year deal. Not convinced that Sowell will be back. But they're going to need some competition there. And I just want to see this line sort of taking those gradual steps forward, because without a better performance from that group, they're going to find it very tough to sort of deliver on the potential that this roster has.
Yeah, also at right tackle, there's someone I keep mentioning on the podcast, a free agent, Benedict Watson. I think he's had a few injury concerns this year, but he is someone who would be relatively cheaper than Jamarcus Webb probably was last year. And he would be someone I really would like to add to the room. But also on a Fedi, he played quite a bit at A&M outside at right tackle. Do you think that's the move they make in Seattle, or do you think they don't want to blur the message for him too much and just keep him at right guard?
It's certainly a possibility. He played a lot of right tackle for Texas A&M to the point that they considered moving him to left tackle in his final year and then moved him back to right tackle because he was so much more comfortable there. And they talked about him as a right tackle when they drafted him. So it was a bit of a surprise, actually, when at the start of the rookie minicamp that they said they were going to try him at right guard because everyone just assumed he was going to be right tackle. So, there's definitely a chance that he could kick outside. And they could bring another right guard in, or even Glowinski played right guard last year, so he could go back to right guard, or Odhiambo could play left guard. You know, there are some combinations they could have there, so I think it's certainly a possibility that Ifedi could go and play outside again.
Yeah. So is this the time of year, obviously, we hope to enjoy a little bit of a playoff run for the Seahawks? Is this the time when you start to delve a little deeper on the upcoming draft class and stuff, or is that work well underway?
Well, the great thing about British TV these days is when I started writing the blog, there was maybe like a little bit of college football on TV. It's never off the TV these days. I mean, you could some weekends I will record sort of five or six games and my poor suffering wife has to suffer through me watching them and stuff like that. Plus, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube now. I mean, like, it's not just draft breakdown. There are websites that will condense the games into sort of 25-minute chunks, you know, get rid of all the adverts and the replay, so you can just watch the game in like 25 minutes. So it's enabled me to watch more players than ever in this college season. So I feel like I'm in a pretty good position and I've had a good head start looking at the draft class. It is going to be a very interesting draft class. There's certainly a lot of strength at safety, defensive end, edge rusher type players, a little bit of depth at running back, and the tight end class looks pretty good as well. So, you know, it's going to be very, very intriguing. And even though the Seahawks are not going to pick any earlier than 21st overall, and we certainly hope they pick a lot later than that, you know, preferably 32nd overall, they're still going to get a good player in the first round this year.
Stu and I are always WhatsApping each other on Saturdays saying, oh, did you see X, Y, Z play? And we always say we've got our various different crushes. And last year for me was Braxton Miller. I just love a player that does something like that. And this year I'm completely sold on Christian McCaffrey. He's not going to be a Seahawk, I would imagine, but I just love watching a player like that. Are there any players that you're looking at that you would say that's your crush, and whether that's Seahawk material, or where else may they go in the draft?
Yeah, one of the players I've loved all year is a guy called Garrett Bowles, who is the Utah left tackle. He's the best left tackle in college football, and it's not close. Not many people talk about him because he actually had a very difficult upbringing. It's very similar to Bruce Irvin's. He was kicked out of his house by his dad. He got into some trouble, some drug problems and some vandalism issues. He went to live with a different family, and then enrolled at a JUCO team called Snow College, played really well there. And because he was playing for Snow College, he was then getting offers from everybody, you know, Alabama, Ole Miss, all of the big teams in the SEC and the ACC and the Pac-12. And he ended up committing to Utah, I think, mainly for geography reasons and the fact that, you know, he's from that area. He has been exceptional this year. I mean, we are talking about everything that you would want in a left tackle: edge, sort of the tenacity to his game, the fluid hips that he has to sort of turn and just drive people off the ball. His everything about him is fantastic. Fantastic run blocker, great pass blocker. You know, I was mocking him to the Seahawks throughout the college season because no one was talking about him, and now people are talking about him being sort of like a top 20 lock. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up going in the top 10. I mean, he's that good. But if the Seahawks have any opportunity to draft Garrett Bowles and then insert him at right tackle, I think that would be the best move.
Yeah, as last year Adams was with Braxton, and mine was Jack Conklin. And from the combine onto the draft, I think I kept messaging Adam saying I had the Conklin sads because the chance of us drafting him last year, as you say, was quite clearly over after the combine. For me this year, I've seen your last Seahawks pick mock draft, you had taking one of his teammates, but Deion Dawkins at Temple, who's someone who just had that Conklin. First of all, when I pressed play on one of his videos on draft breakdown, he just had that immediate impact. And just, is that someone you look at the end of the first? Dawkins, or is he someone a bit later on in the draft?
Yeah, I've watched him a fair bit. I mean, I did a mock draft when I had him to Seattle early. I think that because of just the incredible talent that is on defense this year, I think that might push some of these offensive linemen down the board. But I think that Deion Dawkins is someone that could go. He could sneak into the first if he has a really good combine. The combine's going to reveal so much more. Any offensive lineman that really impresses at the combine is going to go early. So if Deion Dawkins gets there and does anything like Jack Conklin, he could certainly move into sort of the first round range. At the moment, I'm sort of thinking him as a sort of like a second, third round type prospect. But that's the good thing about the Seahawks is they don't have to necessarily spend their first round pick on an offensive lineman. I know people are quite down on this offensive line class, but there are people like Deion Dawkins, Forrest Lamp, which is a great name, by the way, Chad Wheeler at USC, you know, one or two others as well that are very interesting. And Adam Biznovati, who's from Pittsburgh, is a really interesting left tackle as well. Plays a lot like Evan Mathis did at Alabama. So, you know, there are interesting guys that could go in that sort of middle round range that play offensive tackle.
Yeah, there is. Obviously, me Adam do follow the Huskies most intently. And I think I've resigned myself to the fact that I just want Kevin King in the second or third round to be the cornerback opposite or at nickel, replacing Lane on Shed. He's just someone. But yeah, Adam?
Yeah, obviously the Huskies declared four people yesterday.
Oh yeah, I mean, the four guys that declared. I think we're going to see John Ross, Sidney Jones, and Buda Baker go in the first round. I think Elijah Qualls will be a second round pick, probably. And if Vita Vieira declares, then he'll go in the top 15.
Don't say it, Rob. We don't get any ideas in his head. We can't lose this.
Yeah, it seems like he's going to return, and the feeling with him is that he's going to return. Tony Pauline mentioned this from Draft Analyst. He said that he's going to return. He's going to go on a better conditioning program this year and lose a little bit of weight, and if that's the case, he could easily go in the top five in 2018, which is testament to his talent. I mean, when I watched Washington, I just love watching those three guys in the middle, Greg Gaines, Qualls, and Villa. And Villa reminds, you can't help but sort of think back to Aloti Nata when you watch Vita Villa, and that's the kind of potential that he's got. I mean, he's such a special player. But, you know, it's such a great group. But the good thing for the Huskies is Chris Peterson's done a great job in recruiting, and while they're going to lose four really key players, I think that, you know, new stars are definitely ready to emerge on that team. It's a loaded roster that he's got there, and I would expect that Washington and probably are going to be even better next year.
Yeah, before we get shouted at for too much Huskies chat, because we do have some unfortunate Oregon and Wazoo fans that listen to the pod, amongst others. Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago when they're losing players at Danny Shelton, Shaq Thompson, Hikaha, you were thinking, how can they be as good? And I was having a bit of a low day today thinking, I just don't see how they can possibly be as good. But they have got some good redshirt players and players like Trapp who came through at the end of the year. And it is the hope that, I guess, you've got the coaching staff in place is probably the most important thing when it comes to college players.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to sort of write a list of the top five college coaches at the moment, Nick Saban would be number one. Yeah. You might be considered to maybe one or two. You know, the guy at Florida State would be up there, you would imagine. But I think Chris Peterson, without a shadow of a doubt, would be in the top five, possibly even number two. I mean, the way that he's transformed, the Huskies have always, whenever I've been sort of following the draft, the Huskies have either been really bad or they've just been sort of constantly on the brink of something without ever delivering. And yet here they are, you know, they get to the Peach Bowl. Yes, they lost to Alabama, but they gave them a game, which is more than a lot of other teams did this year. They're only going to get better. You know, they've got a young quarterback who's still got room to grow. Great defense, you know, a lot of talent. I mean, the left tackle for Washington could go in the top 10 next year as well. You know, so there's still a lot of talent on that team. And look, the Huskies have lost four guys. Alabama's going to lose about 10 this year. So, you know, a lot of those guys who played really well for Alabama are going to go for the draft. So they're probably not going to be as strong as they are as next year as they were this year. So a lot of teams are going to get, I mean, like Florida State are going to lose Dalvin Cook. You know, LSU are going to lose Leonard Fournette. You know, every team is losing players. Washington are probably better placed than a lot of other teams with the sophomores who are coming through into their junior class, the seniors they're bringing back. I mean, Azeem Victor coming back is a big thing. I mean, they've still a really, really talented roster.
Yeah, it's a shame to lose Mathis as well, with obviously the seniors leaving as well. But, you know, you've got to back them to bounce back. So moving back towards the Seahawk chat before everyone listening switches off in anger and throws their phones out the car window. if there were a couple of sleepers, you know, late in the draft, you know, people, I'm thinking of someone like people talking about Braverman going to the Patriots last year. Is there anyone that you can see that's deep in the draft that might be one for our listeners to look out for as a potential name for the Seahawks in day three of the draft?
Yeah, I mean, one guy to keep an eye on, I think he might rise quite quickly, but at the moment is being projected as kind of an undrafted free agent type and later round pick. I think he might go a bit earlier than that. He's a guy called Shalom Dhawani at Washington State. He's a safety. Mm-hmm. He looks an awful lot like, Tyrann Mathieu type player. Really, really intense, really physical, flies around the field. He looks as if he's added size this year, and he's somebody I could see the Seahawks being really, really interested in, and especially because I don't think they're going to take a safety really early, but I think that looking at them this year, I mean, Tyvus Powell has just been cut. I think that they would rather have better depth at safety in case Cam or Earl is out again, and Shalom has got the chance to play. He could play strong safety, he could play free safety, so I could see him being someone that they really do target. I've talked about a guy at Temple called Hassan Reddick. I think he could even go in the first round, but a lot of people think he's kind of like a round three, round four type player. He has had more tackles for a loss than I think all but two players in college football this year. Sort of Sam linebacker and Bruce Irving type of player. Self-made man, a walk-on at Temple, but a terrific athlete. Loads of sacks as well this year, and does compare in terms of body size and style of play to Bruce Irving. So he's somebody to keep an eye on. I mentioned Adam Bisnavotti earlier. Tackle who will probably kick inside to guard at Pittsburgh. Just reminds me an awful lot of Evan Mathis, and he was a four-star recruit when he joined Pittsburgh. And he's got a wrestling background, which is something that Tom Cable looks at. So if he ticks the physical profile box and also some of the physicality and toughness that they look for, then I certainly think he could be somebody they look at as well.
Yeah, there's a bit of a negativity around the last few draft classes. Obviously 2010, 2012 produced obviously Irving, Wagner, Russell in 2012, Earl and Sherman, Doug and everyone else in the years before as well. Is there some pressure on the Seahawks to deliver with this draft class? Because obviously with how little impact players they've got from the last couple.
I think there's pressure, but only to try and keep the championship window going. I don't think it's related so much to the previous drafts than it is just, this is the most important offseason they've had in a long time, where they could potentially fall back into the pack if they can't get the running game going again, specifically, and get a bit of extra depth on defense. But if they have a really good draft and a good offseason, then they could be the Super Bowl favorites in a few weeks' time for 2017. So that's where the pressure comes from. But, it's very difficult to continue to draft the way the Seahawks did in the first 3 years of this regime, mainly because they're picking a lot later than they did back in, if you're picking sort of 12 overall like they did in 2012, and you're picking 12 in every round, it's a lot easier to get your guys. The other thing is that teams are mimicking the Seahawks. So players that, Richard Sherman, if he was in this draft, would not last to the fifth round, because everybody would know to look for that type of cornerback. He'd probably go in the second round.
I'd be delighted to hear you say that, by the way, Rob.
Yeah. Well,
I'd be delighted to hear you say that.
The thing is that people have worked out the type of player that has worked for Seattle. And plus, there are coaches who have worked in Seattle that are now other teams that are sort of targeting the same kind of players. Like Keanu Neal, I really liked Keanu Neal at Florida last year. He ended up going, I think, 17th overall to Atlanta. If he's in the 2010 draft, he probably goes in the second or third round, because that people are looking at him now because they want to try and get Cam Chancellor or Earl Thomas and people like that. So it's increasingly harder for the Seahawks to find these guys. And if people want to look at New England's draft classes from around 2007 to even the present day, yes, they've hit on players. I mean, people always remember like Rob Gronkowski and Dante Hightower and people like that. But look at all of the busts that New England have had. Look at all the bad draft classes that New England have had over the years. And that's mainly because they have also been picking later in the draft. They don't have as many bigger needs. They try and fill role play guys rather than just getting, top 10 guys. It's very, very difficult to keep drafting at an extremely high level. And very, very few teams manage that.
Yeah, I do think they need to, obviously, compared to the first few years, there is just less holes on this team to fill as well. So there's with all the starters and all the money we've paid, to, especially on the defensive side, there's less holes for people to slide in and make an impact, I guess, also at the same time. But yeah, I could talk draft and Seahawks all day, but we have to wrap it up now. Massively appreciate you coming on, Rob, and spending a good part of an hour with us. Where can people find you on social media and obviously the website as well?
Well, I'm always happy to talk Seahawks on Twitter. It makes a change from the general day job stuff. So if people want to follow us, they can at Rob Staton. If they want to head over to the blog, there's a really nice community there, you know, very active community that contribute on the blog in the comment section. Good guys as well. So if they want to head over to Seahawks Draft Blog or oneword.com, then there's a few guys on there that are from the UK as well. So you're not just going to feel left out. It's not just me on there. So it's a really nice community, and I would, if you want some draft talk, if you just want some general Seahawks talk, or want to get into free agency, and we'll be having the live blog during the combine as well, you know, trying to find those guys that are likely to be drafted by the Seahawks in every round. So lots to look forward to over the next few weeks.
Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, when the draft draws closer, we're going to try and get you back on to talk, because obviously we have a better idea post-combine and all that.
Anytime.
Also, one more thing. We see Daggett's, tell him the Pedestrian Podcast says hello as well. We had him on a few weeks ago before the Tampa game, and it was brilliant.
Oh, good. Yeah, Daggett's a good guy. He's a very frustrated Tampa Bay fan, though. they've not made the playoffs.
We could tell when he joined us, then they absolutely waxed us, so that wasn't a good idea.
I was with him. I was with him for about 7 hours on air on Sunday, and he never mentioned that once. So,
did you manage to speak for more than 15 minutes of that? Or as a TMS fan as well, that was a bit of a fanboy experience for me. So that it was great, but it's we do really appreciate having you on, and yeah, as Stu says, hope we can get you on again soon.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hunter, a bit of a low snap. A flag is down. Ball is blocked. It's rolling around on the 30-yard line. The Seahawks pick it up near side. It's Marsh with the ball. He's run out of bounds. Now let's see what the flag was all about. Holy smokes.
Elder Walsher, offense.
Yes.
Who is the call?
First down, Seahawks. The deepest penetration of a night. And it's because the Seahawks blocked a punt.
Right, so I hope you enjoy that. As I said at the introduction, we will be having a usual Pedestrian Podcast. Massive thanks to Rob for coming on and talking. As I said, I could talk about drafting and the Seahawks all day. That was good fun though, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, really good. Really enjoyable, and nice to finally have someone on the program that has a clue about the Seattle Seahawks. So that was good.
Yeah. It took 20 odd episodes, but we finally got there then.
20 episodes, few guests, three idiot hosts, and all of a sudden we've got some Seahawk knowledge. So that's great.
Yeah, we were probably due. Just like the Seahawks are due a bit of an explosion. But yeah, usual podcast will be with you on all the usual means. Until the next time, it's been a Pedestrian Podcast, and go Hawks.
Go Hawks. That was my Ross impression. How was that?
Very good. Thanks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48.